I'm not up with modern music trends. Is it even pronounced Arkells?
I don't know about that. I would have.
Well, it looked like a pretty big concert that Nick Nurse played at over the weekend. Although they played a Stevie Wonder song, I thought maybe they would play one of their songs. But okay, maybe it was because Signed, Sealed, Delivered has to do with the championship. But like, it was like a huge thing, and I had never heard of them. And I feel like I'm in major violation of pop culture.
They must be much more popular in Canada. I just looked it up on Spotify, and they do not have a large number of monthly listens.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the Bare Naked Ladies were Canadian, but, you know, they were
more than others.
I can't even remember the last time
I'm not going to lie. I was a fan.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Well, you must not be listening to my shuffle, because they're definitely in there. All right, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's allegedly a down week in the NBA, but the reality is that all, like 70% of the free agent deals are going to get done this week if they're not already done. And joining us to talk about it from Seattle is the machine, Kevin Pelton, who was pumping out draft grades fast and furious on draft night. Pelton, you weren't grading like pick swap trades, were you?
We didn't do the ones in the second round that were like that. I think the only ones that were straight picks, pretty much all of the ones we did involved some NBA player, I think.
Yeah, and he's always with us, but he's going to be more of a voice today, we hope, is our producer. Are you an executive producer, Andrew Hahn, or are you just a producer?
Sure, I can be an executive producer.
Would you just call yourself podcast vice president? Senior vice president? Andrew Hahn in Los Angeles.
Here's what I know.
Pelton, I want to...
I was an understudy, and it's finally paid off, because I just sit here at the ready, and now people haven't showed up, and here I am.
Yeah, tonight playing the role of...
Right. We're hoping to be joined by somebody else, but we won't call that person out for getting a mistime wrong. Pelton, last week when the Lakers trade happened, I don't want to totally rehash everything, but you had, when the trade details first were announced, you had one grade, and it was published online. This wasn't just internal. It was published online. And then when all of the pick swapping and deferments came out, you changed the grade. I don't remember you ever changing a grade like this before, and you change a grade significantly, I would say. Will you real quick go over the way you viewed that trade when it was initially reported, and then when it was totally done, and how you saw the change with your grades of that deal, the Anthony Davis trade?
Yep. I mean, I listened to the pod that you guys did that night, and I totally agreed with it. It was funny. I already knew the details by the time I was listening to you talk about the details, but 100% agreed that they were a defining factor in this trade, because, you know, when you first heard the description of two first-round picks, okay, you're thinking, you know, the Lakers are going to be out a couple of picks. Most likely those will not be very good. They'll probably be a competitive team. It's not a huge factor in the trade. But then for it to encumber the Lakers for so many years between the protections, the swaps, and the deferment, like, and push those as far out as it did, because the farther out you get from the period where LeBron James is currently one of the best players, maybe still the best player in the league, you know, maybe he'll prove that next season, the more likely I think it becomes that the Lakers are not competitive and that those picks do become quite valuable. And just now, New Orleans, you know, what David Griffin has set up here is they have a bunch of different shots at those picks being good. You know, there's a lot of different things that could go wrong in just one season for the Lakers if they have the wrong injuries, that sort of thing, where all of a sudden the Pelicans are looking at a pretty good pick.
So you initially gave the Lakers an A or an A minus? I can't remember which.
I don't think it was that high ever. I think I gave them a B and the Pelicans a B plus, and then dropped the Lakers down to a C plus after we got the final details.
That is some harsh grading from Pelton, Mr. Hahn, giving the Lakers a C-plus on a trade to acquire in his prime superstar, But I mean, that's how strong he felt about it.
He doesn't grade on a curve. It's just, you know, maybe some people, nobody passes in some years for Professor Pelton.
Well, the way I like to think about it, nobody ever asked him about this, but to me, a C is like, okay, I'm indifferent between I would have done this deal and I would have not have done this deal. So even getting a C+ is still like, all right, I guess I would have done this deal. You know, at the end of the day, you did get Anthony Davis. I don't know where the Lakers were going before that, since, you know, by all accounts, they were not a player for any of this year's top free agents. But the cost made it so, you know, it was only a slightly favorable than doing nothing at all.
So, all right. Well, I don't remember you changing a grade. Like, have you changed a grade like that before? I mean, it wasn't like you waited 6 months. It was like, you know, an hour. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think it's happened before sometimes when we, you know, didn't know exactly what the details of some of the picks were. Protections have changed. And then the one that I went back and specifically regraded was the Kyrie Irving trade, once we found out how bad Isaiah Thomas's hip injury was and that almost scuttled the deal. That was a pretty substantial change, although there was like an actual transaction associated with it in terms of the Celtics having to cough up an additional second round pick.
Not enough, if you ask me, but that's old territory. No. What did you give the what was your grade? Because I missed this one. What did you grade the Pelicans Hawks trade? You know, the Hawks got 4 picks for moving down 4 spots. I thought it was pretty good, but I guess it depends on what you think of, you know, DeAndre Hunter, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm not the world's biggest DeAndre Hunter fan. He didn't come out particularly well in any of the statistical projections that we have in kind of the ESPN family. My own ESPN Analytics does one, and then 538. He wasn't in the top 13 of any of those. The highest he was in any of them was the end of the lottery. So, yeah, give you up so much value. You know, they better be right. I gave the Hawks a D on that one, which... much to Travis Schlenk's dismay, the second consecutive year they have not graded out particularly well in their draft trade, which, you know, still, despite that, they have this awesome young core because Trae Young was great. I've always been a big fan of him as a prospect. That grade last year was never a commentary on that. And then they nailed the John Collins and looked like they nailed the Kevin Herter picks. So, you know, if they do that with DeAndre Hunter, I mean, eventually we're probably not going to care about the cost, but it is a lot.
All right, I want to clean up some business that's happening this week. This is option week. All these player options and team options come in during various days in this week leading up to Sunday, which is when free agency begins. A lot of these have already become known. And let me just say that whenever you hear of a player option, if the player doesn't actually have to take action. So, for example, it was reported over the weekend that Kawhi Leonard is opting out of his contract with the Raptors. If Kawhi never says a word, if Kawhi just stands mute, which he is exceedingly good at, he would have become a free agent. The only action he has to take is to say, I opt in. So there's, and that may seem a little technical, but it does matter. So for example, one of the big things this week that I am watching for is with the Nuggets and Paul Millsap. Now, Paul Millsap has a team option next year for $30.5 million to remain with the Nuggets. Because it's a team option, the team must speak up and say, we are exercising that option or not exercising that option. There will be a full press release announcement one way or the other, and we're going to talk about it in a minute. There's 3 that I'm watching closely this week. And certainly if either of you are thinking of others, you can, speak up. So the first one that's coming up, on the 27th, which is what, Wednesday? Is that right? Thursday. Marc Gasol has a player option for $25.6 million. Again, if he does not say a word, he becomes a free agent. If he exercises it, he will raise his hand. So that to me is an interesting one. The center market is really deep this summer. If you want a center, this is the summer you want to be in the market, because I think there's a lot of good names out there, which again, we'll talk about in a minute. The Millsap option is really interesting to me because Denver is below the tax line. even if they pick up the Millsap option, Kevin. Yep. But if they pick it up, they put themselves in a position where they're kind of close to the tax, and you wonder whether or not they would use their mid-level. Or more interestingly, they have a couple of trade exceptions. I know they remember they traded away Wilson Chandler last year and just handed him over to the 76ers, and they've got a $13 million trade exception, which, you know, could prove valuable in the next few weeks as teams look to get off money. They could get a free player. And one of the things that Denver is really good at is being smart and picking up free players. You know, they got Michael Porter Jr. in the draft last year because they were willing to take a chance on him. They ended up with Bol Bol this year because they're willing to take a chance. But if they opt, if they use that, that they exercise that Paul Millsap option, you know, kind of takes them out of using all that. How do you view, and what do you think that Denver is going to do there? I mean, obviously they could let him become a free agent and they could negotiate a multi-year deal where he makes less than $30 million. But then you let him be on the open, unrestricted market, and there could be some teams in the market for him.
Yeah, I think including Paul Millsap's not most recent former team, but one of his former teams, Utah, to me that's one of a couple of players that, you know, if they get, I would be willing to waive Derek Favors, who has that contract for a little more than $17 million that's non-guaranteed through, I believe, July 6th. But early enough, or late enough, basically, that they will have a chance to see what's going to happen in free agency before having to make a decision on whether to keep Favors as a starting power forward or whether they can replace him. As I look at that decision from Utah's standpoint, I think that it's more likely that they pick up the option, because even though that $30 million is clearly too much money for Paul Millsap at this stage of his career, I think it actually is better for their kind of long-term financial picture to have him on the books for that, avoid the luxury tax this year, maybe not spend as much, but then, you know, next summer, you'll probably be re-signing Millsap a year older. If you look to re-sign him, it'll be at a lower number. And that fits in, I think, better with their timeline, because the other thing they have going on is Jamal Murray is up for an extension this summer, or a new contract as a restricted free agent the following a year from now. And that's going to substantially increase their payroll because of the fact that he's been making relatively so little money for the last couple of years here.
Max or nothing is what I would say if I was Jamal Murray's agent. Would you agree?
Yeah, maybe throw a profanity there on the end of that.
To the old Chandler Parsons from McMahon.
Yep.
Yeah, standing. What was it? He was leaning out of the limo. Max or nothing.
I didn't remember that part of it.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Do you remember that, Andrew?
Yeah, it was definitely a limo, like outside of a nightclub.
Yeah, Max or nothing. It turned out, by the way, to be nothing.
No, from the Mavericks, but he got the max.
Right, he did. Well, right. But but Cuban was like, "Yeah, it's going to have to be nothing. Sorry, buddy." Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of extension eligible players this summer, and I don't know if they are $100 million players, but if I'm their agents, again, Pelton, you tell me if you think I'm out of line here. If I represent Pascal Siakam, Ben Simmons, or Jamal Murray, I'm saying to my team, max or nothing, max or I'll see you next summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think all those guys, you know, the restricted free agent market, you look at the 2020 free agent crop, it's not as deep as this year's. And there's going to be a lot of teams who have
very shallow. In fact, very shallow.
Yeah, if Anthony Davis resigns at the Lakers, you know, that's a pretty big drop off to who the next best free agent on the market is. So, yeah, I would feel very comfortable at this point taking my chances, unless it's, you know, really close to the max. I mean, if it's kind of like the, you know, the Klay Thompson where they locked him in at what was the projected max, but the max ended up being higher. I mean, maybe that's close enough that I would just take the security, but, you know, not a substantial discount.
Okay, so Saturday is the date for Millsap. We'll see what happens there. I'm sure some teams are going to be watching. I think you're right, KP. You could probably make a case for either side there.
Hey, Brian.
Yes, Andrew.
Shouldn't the thing to consider with Millsap also be to pick up the, like, to me, I feel like picking up the option is a no-brainer because Denver doesn't historically attract free agents, and they could use Millsap's contract as filler to trade for maybe one of these disgruntled stars that has a few years left on his deal.
True. And the other thing, but here's the thing. Number one, every $1 million matters in Denver. So you may see, like one thing you can, you know, I see people saying is, oh, well, they can pick up the option and still be under the tax. No problem. Don't worry about it. And I go, well, then you people don't know Enos Stanley Kroenke, because every $1 million matters to him. It's not just, oh, no, yeah. No problem. You know, that's, and while Josh Kroenke absolutely runs the team day to day, if you don't think E. Stanley isn't aware of every single thing that's spent there, you know, he has a rule that Sam Walton was his father-in-law of Walmart fame. And I don't know what the threshold is. I don't know if it's $25,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is. But every check that's over that amount, he has to personally sign. He wants to know exactly what the spending in his teams are. And, you know, it does sound like a lot of money, but when you operate, you know, he owns like 5 or 6 pro teams. I mean, he owns Arsenal and the LA Rams and the Denver Nuggets alone, all, and the Colorado Avalanche. I think he owns the lacrosse team.
And the Colorado Rapids?
And the Colorado Rapids. He owns like a bunch of different stadiums. I mean, the man is spending $25,000 to $50,000 on expenditures probably every few minutes. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. My point is it may be a no-brainer in terms of cap math, but it is not a no-brainer in terms of the way that franchise operates.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if their budget is less than the tax, then that changes kind of the decision-making on that process. I mean, I think the other thing here is, you know, I think the Nuggets, if they do turn it down, it's probably because they have a deal in place with Millsap, would be my guess.
That's what we all thought about Al Horford, too. So
that's a fair point. But that was his choice.
So, okay, so Gasol is one I'm watching. Actually, let's go over the free agent centers real quick. So let's leave Gasol out of it for now. So here are some of the free agent centers that are out there. Nikola Vucevic, Al Horford, who I'm calling a center. He's a center in today's day and age. Brook Lopez, all three of those guys, very good players, I think. Then you have some of the guys who are more limited. And I'm going to put DeMarcus Cousins in there. Now, he would rank at the top of most people's lists. I just don't know physically where you think DeMarcus is. And I don't know, you know, multi-year deals-wise, but he is a free agent, unrestricted, and would be an option. And then you have DeAndre Jordan, who just had a miserable year last year. We won't slander him like McMahon does every time on this podcast. You have Jonas Valanciunas, who opted out of his, I think it was about $18 million contract with the Grizzlies. It seems like the Grizzlies intend to give him a new deal, but he still is an unrestricted free agent. Then you have Robin Lopez, who had a really good year last year, I thought. Did you agree with that, Pelton?
I wasn't as big a fan of his year.
Oh.
I mean, I think one of the interesting things is to jump in here, and I know you're going to flesh out the list a little bit. Like, part of the reason that this is such an interesting free agent market for centers is because it has become so easy in this league to get quality production at center on the cheap. So you kind of have to weigh, you know, if it's a 10% upgrade for, you know, that one of those top guys, is that worth it to pay, you know, double the money for 10% better production? I think that's going to be a really interesting question.
Yeah, and then you've got some interesting guys like Dwayne Dedmon is an interesting guy who's unrestricted. Boban.
Ed Davis.
He's not, you know. Ed Davis. Kevon Looney, unrestricted. I don't think he's going anywhere. So even before we even get to Marc Gasol, there's a lot of centers out there. Also, Willie Cauley-Stein, who over the weekend, his agent told the Sacramento Bee that he, thank you very much for your support of Willie. He would like you to not qualify him and him to be an unrestricted free agent. He's done in Sacramento. Please do not extend him a qualifying offer. Thank you very much.
And I feel like that feeling is mutual.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that you wouldn't qualify him. You know, because you could always, you know, you leave your options open.
That and renounce him after. Another player that I think is an interesting option decision over the next week here, the fact that we haven't heard anything about it, is Nerlens Noel in Oklahoma City, who's got a second year at the minimum, which is about $2 million for him, or could head back into free agency after finding it pretty unfavorable last year.
I would not pick up that option if I were him.
To me, he's a really nice option for a team like the Lakers or someone like that with their room exception. I'd rather
his agent?
Him than DeAndre Jordan.
I
think it's Rich Paul.
Interesting. Rich Paul would be interested. Actually, all joking aside, he might be a good option for the Lakers, especially because he would probably be low money, which they might need. Also, Enes Kanter.
They'll need either way. Let's be clear about that.
Enes Kanter is a free agent as well. So a lot of bigs out there floating around. I don't know if that would influence Marc Gasol, but I do think if you're a team like I know that the Pelicans are now in the market for a center. They've cleared money with their trades. The Pelicans are going to be bidding. The Celtics, I assume, are going to be bidding since their top two centers, Gasol and Aaron Baines, Horford and Aaron Baines. Dallas may be in the market for a center. We talked last week. We think Al Horford is a real option there. The other option, interesting options. Sean Livingston. It's low money, relatively, $7.5 million. $2 million guaranteed. We think Sean's going to retire this week, KP?
I mean, he's hinted at it all season. Now, Livingston, the other interesting aspect here is, if the Warriors aren't or think they're going to re-sign Kevin Durant or are certain that they can get a sign and trade for him that would create a giant trade exception they could use, Livingston becomes their most tradable piece, and they could increase that guarantee a little bit to match up and allow them to take on enough salary to get a reasonable player. Like Jay Crowder, the moment he went to Memphis, my first thought is the Warriors should trade for Jay Crowder. So if you offered the Grizzlies a first-round pick to take that guaranteed salary of Livingston off your books and get Jay Crowder as your kind of combo 3-4 who can slide down to 4 in the death-type lineups, would Memphis do that?
This is why KP should be working for an organization, because that's really smart thinking. And has worked for organizations in the past. That said, we're not letting you go. That's an interesting thought. Yeah, I mean, when you look at that trade, I totally, the Conley trade. By the way, so we're talking about grades. Will you go over your grades for the Conley trade? I thought this happened, it was either draft day or the day before the draft. I thought it was great value for the Jazz, especially considering what Anthony Davis just went for. And he's, Conley has even a little bit more value, I think, because he's got a 2-year contract. It's almost perfect. In 2 years, he may not be the player he was last year. You have to pay him a lot of money, but the Jazz have to spend the money on somebody. What was your evaluation of that trade?
Yeah, I wasn't quite as high on it because the thing I didn't like about it was the fact that they gave up some contributors in terms of creating the matching salary. They didn't want to include Derek Favors because of that non-guaranteed contract you just talked about. And then they also didn't want to include Dante Exum, who the organization is still much higher on than I think just about anybody else.
That would be true.
His difficulty staying healthy. Yeah. And so because of that, you have to give up Crowder, who played a lot of minutes for them last season. I mean, he played more minutes than Favors did in that playoff series against Houston. Their best lineups included Crowder in place of Favors at power forward. And then also Kyle Korver, who was their best shooter, not as effective in that series against Utah or against Houston. But, if improving their shooting is a key goal of the Jazz, that didn't help them. So, I think I think they definitely strengthened their starting lineup, which now is going to be one of the best in the West. The question is, how much would they kind of undercut themselves a little bit by hurting their depth and cutting into their bench? Because, if they do retain Favors or use all their remaining cap space to sign a replacement for him at power forward, all they're going to have is that room exception to kind of fill out the bench.
Right. I mean, I will say this about Kyle Korver, who I have a great relationship with and know his family. I mean, this is not personal. He has not proven to be that effective in the playoffs the last few years. He can kind of get taken away.
Yeah, you can take him away. Yeah.
And so I realize you got to get to the playoffs, but that may have factored into their decision making. Crowder is a loss for sure, but you are getting Mike Conley, So
yeah, I mean, I ultimately, like I said, it's better than a C. It's definitely a trade I would have done. I gave them a B on that one, but I think it's not as good as it could have been if they had done it at the deadline and sent out Ricky Rubio as the bulk of the salary in return.
Right. So, one other thing to watch here would be J.R. Smith this week. So, J.R. has a grandfathered-in contract, and what I mean by that is, if you were to sign a contract today, and you know, for example, is Sean Livingston's contract grandfathered in under these rules?
It is not. He was current CBA.
Right. So, for example, so Sean Livingston makes $7.7 million actually. If the Warriors were to trade him today, for example, for the purposes of counting against the cap, you could only use him as a he's only got $2 million guaranteed. So if you were going to trade him for somebody, you could only count the $2 million guaranteed. Now, if you waited until after Sunday, which is when his contract becomes fully guaranteed at $7.5 million, then you could count him as $7 million for trade purposes. But if you did it today, it would only be $2 million unless you picked up the option. But if the team was trading him with the intention of waiving him to save money, then they couldn't do that. So the reason JR is interesting is he's got a $16 million deal, actually 15.7 to be clear. It's only $3.9 million guaranteed, but because it's grandfathered in before this rule came into place, a team could trade him for $16 million in value, send $16 million or, you know, whatever it is, almost $20 million probably to Cleveland, and then immediately cut JR before Sunday, and you'd only owe him $4 million bucks. And the reason you would do that is if you're a team out there that has either got luxury tax problems or is looking to clear salary cap space, because you got big plans for next week. That's one of the few, you know, things you can do to do that. Now the Cavs would like to be incentivized for that, and I thought they were going to make a trade at the draft to acquire an extra first-round pick using JR. They ended up not doing that. They ended up trading 4 second-round picks and $5 million for the 30th pick in the draft. That was how they got their extra first-round pick. So I don't know whether they just let JR go and cut him on Sunday or they make a trade this week, but that's another interesting thing to happen. The Cavs are near the luxury tax, Kevin. I don't even know if they're taking on more money at this point. They're not going to be a playoff team, but
Yeah, that's what makes this one particularly unusual is there are a few, you know, it's not uncommon in the past to have this kind of situation, but usually it's a team that, you know, has some wiggle room. Cleveland would probably then have to find some way to cut salary and might have to give up a draft pick to get back out of the luxury tax because there's no way you would want to pay the tax. And I think they would still be in the repeater tax because they've only been out 1 year this team.
Yeah, I would say that would not be happening. But I guess if a team is desperate enough, although there's a lot of teams with cap space out there, you know, so, but the question is the teams may not be willing to use their cap space on JR by Sunday when there's still all the possibilities,
right,
out there. All right. The NBA draft is over, which means Summer League is coming up. And if you're going to be in Vegas, I'm sure you will be excited not only to see your team's draft picks play, but also any of the shows that are going on the strip on a nightly basis, concerts and other shows. And then, of course, now we have NBA free agency where a bunch of your favorite teams are about to sign big time players or they might lose some big time players. We won't focus on that. And you're going to want to get ahead of the game as you look towards when the NBA schedule comes out and there's to pick out those games that you want. So how do you get tickets for all of that? How do you get tickets for anything, whether it's NBA related or not? The best answer is Vivid Seats. They are an online ticket marketplace that is dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment experiences that last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, our listeners can watch their favorite teams, of course, and their favorite artists perform right with your own eyes in person. Vivid Seats helps everyone find their seats to those live events, those sports concerts, don't forget the theater, and of course more. And not only are they great with their prices, and this is really what's most important to me, they have a very easy purchasing experience because you don't need a headache when you want to buy tickets to an event. So here's what we're going to do for you. If you go and download the Vivid Seats app, you can put in the podcast code HOOPS, that's H-O-O-P-S, and listeners can receive 10% off their first ticket purchase on Vivid Seats. And of course, all of those ticket purchases are 100% backed with a guarantee. So you go to the App Store or Google Play, you download the Vivid Seats app. And again, the first time customers put in promo code HOOPS, get 10% off your first order, and then make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to that favorite live event. Hello, Ramona. Ramona Shelburne joining us from Los Angeles.
What's going on?
How are you? So we've just been very boringly probably going over some of the options for this week. We've saved all Lakers talk for you, so don't worry.
I love it. Thank you.
Those are the options of stuff that could happen this week that we'll be watching. Ramona, it's been some mildly interesting things going on in the Laker world, would you say?
I would say that would be more than mildly interesting, right? Like they're sort of always I can't even remember the last time they were boring. Maybe it was that one year when they had, the best hope was Jordan Clarkson. Julius Randle had broke his foot in the first game of the year. And that was their only hope. And that was a really long time ago. But ever since then, they've been interesting, to say the least.
And he got a great contract out of that, too.
He certainly did.
By the way, real quick, this was just a little news item that you had over the weekend. Or was it? No, it was – I'm not giving proper credit. It was I don't have any super insight into this, Ron Adams potentially joining Frank Vogel's staff, without giving up more information, I think that there's a decent chance that this is going to happen. I think there was a feel that Ron was going to maybe move on, whether it was to the Lakers or somebody else this summer. I think I heard that during the finals, so... If the Lakers want him, I think they can get him. Not that I think that's going to materially change the world, but...
You know, the Warriors coaching staff has not really had a lot of turnover. It's sort of been this, other than the addition of Mike Brown, so Luke Walton got the Laker job a few years ago, Alvin Gentry gets the Pelicans job a few years ago, and ever since that, everybody has pretty much stayed the same. Mike Brown... sort of famously coached in the finals when Steve Kerr was still dealing with his spinal fluid leak issues, right? The headaches and all those symptoms. But there hasn't been a lot of turnover. And I think that has been, a sense of like, even though it's a great to have consistency on a staff. There's also been a sense with that, just the entire organization, right? Like sometimes you just need some new blood, and it has nothing to do with Rob. It has nothing to do with Ron. But it's more like really good championship organizations, especially when you're running it back with essentially the same group of players and essentially the same group of coaches all the time. Like an infusion of new blood is always good. A lot of people talk to me about, them adding Willie Green a few years ago. Like, he's been a nice addition. Mike Brown's been a nice addition. Just literally to have a new voice in the room.
Well, that was just an interesting thing that was the Lakers could add him as one of the most well-respected assistants in the league. And now you're building a pretty good staff if Jason Kidd and Ron Adams are seats, two and three.
It's an interesting concept, right? Of just like, let's just hire all these ex-head coaches and guys with incredible experience. Because it's not usually how you build on a staff, right? Maybe there's one or two of those, but, that just seems to be that the Lakers sort of felt they had an inexperienced staff last year. They felt like that really could be a source of improvement.
Can I speak freely?
Whether or not Luke Walton was going to stay, right? Even before there was, Luke Walton was leaving, it was, he needed to upgrade his staff or he needed to change up his staff. And so they've gone in the complete other direction.
So I think in the past, the Lakers have been an organization that is not afraid to pay front-end talent. For example, they paid Phil Jackson the highest salary in the history of head coaches at the time. But when it's come to support staff, or maybe not paying Jerry West, paying Magic, a huge number, to be in front of your front office, or paying Jerry West a huge number. They haven't always been willing to spend on support staff. That's been a criticism of the Lakers over the years. Ron Adams will not be cheap. Jason Kidd. Yeah, right, exactly. Alex McKechnie. They lost him because they didn't want to pay people during the lockout. you know, one of the best physical therapists, trainers, performance coaches in the league. Ron Adams will not come cheap. Jason Kidd did not come cheap. They're spending on some support staff here. To get to the players, Ramona, there has been this incredible back and forth about the way that the Lakers structured the trade when it comes to salary cap space. I don't know if we'll ever 100% know the truth because David Griffin has not executed the trade with Anthony Davis yet, and so I don't know if what he says it can be taken as gospel because he has to protect the deal. I don't know if we should make assumptions about what was in Rob Pelinka's head. Here's what I do know. They are going to have to use this salary cap space, whether it's $23 million, whether it's $32 million, whether it's $18 million. Because Pelton, one thing I keep saying, they really need to keep Reggie Bullock. And Reggie Bullock's cap hold is $4 million. And, okay, if you're in position to sign Kyrie Irving, yes, you're going to renounce him and do everything you can to clear up the space. But if you're not, you probably need to keep Reggie Bullock because, number one, you have no perimeter players. And, number two, if you sign him to whatever deal you sign him to, he then becomes a trade piece, which otherwise you would totally lose. So when people keep saying they've got $22 or $23 million, I keep thinking, subtract $4 million from that because they have to – seriously consider keeping him. Whatever it is, Ramona, and whether they use that on one player or two players or five players, with where their draft position is and where the rest of their roster is, which is basically non-existent in terms of their young players, because, you know, they've basically traded everyone from their last five drafts with the exception of Mo Wagner and Kyle Kuzma, they've got to hit on these free agents. I don't care how much space they have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've essentially left themselves with almost no margin to improve the team once they spend this cap space, right? I mean, you have your standard exceptions, right? And it's not like they won't be able to fill out a roster, okay? But there's about, depends on if you spread it around to two or three players. But you know, for the next six drafts now, right? So we can go all the way out to 2025. So there's six drafts. They will not be able to use anything other than second round picks in trades to fill out a roster or to upgrade a roster. It's not a lot of flexibility. And
yeah, that's why you could, that's why you kind of got to sign Reggie Bullock because maybe you can trade him, even if he's not that huge of a player for you.
Yeah, I mean, he was a shooter. You know, they went out and traded for him. They traded Svi Mykhailiuk, who, you know, a lot of people actually in LA were high on in this sort of draft and develop kind of role.
But another draft pick they traded.
Yeah, another draft pick they traded. I mean, look, I think Isaac Bonga, who's still on the roster, was a draft pick.
That's
true. So there's one more. Jermario Jones was a G League player for them. They actually like Jermario Jones. He actually would probably be on the roster if they don't end up trading him. The question really is, how do they fill out this roster and what do you prioritize if they have a chance at Kawhi or Kyrie? My sense is there are some gymnastics they can go through to get to very, very close to the max if one of those guys would be interested in signing with them. If one of those guys says, okay, yes, we want to do it. But it's with the exception of Kawhi and Kyrie, and maybe Jimmy, maybe. I don't see them even attempting those feats of gymnastics to create that much cap space. I think you just hold on to those other three young players that are still on your roster and save them or save any combination or one or two or three of them. That's Mo Wagner, Jermario Jones, and Isaac Bonga.
Real quick, can I go over the Lakers' first-round draft history for the last decade?
Okay.
By the way, they won some championships in here. I'm not criticizing them.
I'm just
2007, they drafted Javaris Crittenden.
Ooh, let's not speak about that one.
He's in jail. 2009, they drafted Tony Douglas and immediately traded him to New York. He never played. I don't think he ever played for the Lakers. Okay, they didn't have another first-round pick till 2014, if you can believe it, which was Julius Randle. He left in free agency. 2015, D'Angelo Russell, they traded him. Also 2015, Larry Nance Jr., traded. 2016, Brandon Ingram, traded. 2017, Lonzo Ball, traded. And Tony Bradley, also traded. 2018, Mo Wagner, might be traded, right? 2019, technically they drafted DeAndre Hunter, will be traded. That's their first round.
You forgot Kyle Kuzma, the guy that they refused to trade.
Right. I apologize. Kyle Kuzma, who was acquired.
And Josh Hart, I think, was the first round pick as well.
Why not have him on this list? Anyway, Josh Hart traded. Traded. Yeah. Kyle Kuzma, still there. Point is, they've never really built through first round picks. So it's not unusual for the Lakers to do this. They were
constantly trading away first round picks. I'm trying to go back in Laker history off the top of my head, but from what I remember, they were always trading their first round picks to improve the team. I think they're, over all the time that Phil Jackson was here, I constantly remember them swapping out first round picks and never really worrying about it, because I think the famous Phil Jackson quote on Rook.
Hey, Ramona.
Rookies are just one grade above that. Like, they never really use them. And one person involved in this particular trade said, I said, are you guys worried about the draft picks that you may have to convey down the road? And the response was, we could all get hit by an asteroid tomorrow.
I don't know if that's the way you want to operate your franchise, but yes, that is true. That is true.
Well, they have two of the top five players in the league now. And so let me ask 26.
That's true.
And zero
now
guards.
Let me ask you this. Let's say they actually had to get max space. Who do we logically think they could still get with max money?
They think that there's still a chance at Kawhi, and I don't really know what that's based on. But I think if there's even any chance, you have to try. He just won an NBA title. He's obviously an incredible player. I think Kyrie is another person that, there's a lot going on. And as we sit here less than a week out from free agency, we all think we have a pretty decent idea of what Kyrie is going to do. But I don't know, Brian, would you wager money on that? I wouldn't.
All right. Here's the scenario. by the way, this is a hypothetical scenario. I am not reporting this. I am not. No one is telling me this. I would never say this, like with my name, like with a colon after my name, that I would say this. But if you're, can I make it even more clear?
Yes, aggregators touch.
This is a scenario that I could see potentially happening. Do I think this is a likely scenario? No, but a scenario that could potentially happen. Is a preamble long enough? Are we safe? Okay.
Yeah, you're safe.
We think that Kyrie is headed to Brooklyn. We think that he wants to bring Kevin Durant with him. We know that the Nets are trying to make that possible because they've made three significant roster decisions in the last week to get space cleared towards the double max to pull that off. Let's say Durant says to Kyrie, "Look, I want to play with you, man, but I don't want to play with you in Brooklyn. I mean, I love the Nets, blah, 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 blah. Can we do it with the Knicks? Like, I want to go to the Knicks. I don't want to go to the Nets." And what if Kyrie says, I don't want to play for the Knicks, man. I don't want that. Like, would Kyrie be willing to go to Brooklyn without Durant? And would Brooklyn be willing without knowing that he could bring Durant with him? Would they take the one star without the other star? Because without question, Kyrie comes along with some baggage, and he, as the singular star in Boston, it did not go well a lot of the times, including this season. And if that were to happen, and we're already lining up four or five dominoes, would LA reemerge as a possibility? Because, for weeks, months now, I keep being told by people, it's a chance. LA's a chance. LA's a chance. But then I have other people saying, there's no way Kyrie is going to play with LeBron again in LA. You can forget about it. Slam the door shut. So I don't know what to believe, to be honest with you. But if if Durant doesn't want to join him in Brooklyn, I think it opens up windows. If you're the Lakers, do you sit there and wait for those windows to develop, or do you go out there and try to sign some guys, you know, sign some role players, you know, starting Sunday?
Well, so that's one of the most interesting questions. When is Kevin Durant going to make his decision?
Don't know. July 4th was last time.
Brian, here's the other wrinkle to this. If you're Brooklyn and you have to, and this is, again, we're spitballing here, okay? If you're Brooklyn and you have to decide if you want Kyrie without knowing if you're getting Durant, unless you know it's a package deal, are you really willing to let D'Angelo Russell, whom you traded for, developed, and saw turn into an all-star, are you willing to supplant D'Angelo Russell? Because he's a restricted free agent. Now, you can wait, right? You can chill on that, but somebody else is probably going to grab him. And what if that other team is the team that traded him? Lakers. I mean, you know, I never thought I would see the day, but DeAndre Jordan went back and played for the Mavericks after that whole sit-in.
I like that, to sit in.
The thing about this, I don't know what we want to call it.
Timing, I can't, this is something that has become such a big deal, in the NBA over the last few years, is timing. Timing. So KP, you can't actually sign an offer sheet until the moratorium is over, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct, yep.
And then you have a 48-hour match period. Right.
And so, you know, if you really want to stretch things out, we saw this with the Wizards with Otto Porter a few years ago. I think it was the Nets who ended up signing him to that offer sheet, where they took the 48 hours and then they took 48 hours to bring him in for a physical. And then they took another 48 hours to announce the results of that physical. And that finally is when the deal was done, 6 days later. And only at that point was Brooklyn's cap space no longer tied up.
Right. So it's a real disadvantage. Restricted free agency is one of the worst things to go through. And there's like agents over the course of time have tried 1,000 different methods to get out of restricted free agency. I think one of the most creative ones we ever saw was what Patrick McCaw did this last summer, where he signed an offer sheet that was non-guaranteed. The first fully non-guaranteed offer sheet in league history, which probably will be outlawed in the next CBA, and was cut by the Cavs a few days later and then went from restricted to unrestricted that quick. The reason there's all these things that have been tried, and, you know, there's all this saber-rattling that happens and all this threatening and all this stuff, is because restricted free agency is hard to defeat. So D'Angelo Russell, no matter what he says, and this is a problem for the Lakers, Ramona, let's say the Lakers really do want D'Angelo Russell. Let's say they've decided that they will use all of their cap space on him, whether it's $21 million or $24 million, they can't afford to not know what the decision is going to be until July 8th. Now, if Durant and Kyrie commit on July 2nd and Brooklyn needs to pull the qualifying offer to have the space to do it, and they know for sure that he is going to be available, then you can lock in. But what if there's this indecision period for 8 days? I just don't know if the Lakers can afford to wait on it. And timing is so important. Like the Tobias Harris trade. Let me bring this up real quick and then I'll let you go, Ramona. One of the reasons why the Clippers traded Tobias Harris was, yes, they got some draft picks for him and it helped with their structure, and they love Landry Shamet, et cetera. But they came to the understanding that when they were approaching this summer, and they came to this understanding back in February, or even January probably, that they couldn't offer Tobias Harris, who was going to be unrestricted, they couldn't offer him a max on July 1st. And if they couldn't offer him a max on July 1st, maybe on July 3rd, if they got told no by Kawhi and Durant and Jimmy Butler and whoever else they were going to, maybe Tobias would be a max player for them. Tobias may not be able to wait. And so because Tobias Harris wasn't a July 1st max, maybe Tobias Harris is a July 1st max for Philly. Maybe he would have been a July 1st max for Orlando or somebody else. But because he's on a July 1st max, they had to trade him. And that's why the timing is going to matter for a lot of teams, especially the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Lakers need warm bodies. Right? Like, they need guys who can get out there and play right away. And you, I don't really know how this free agency is going to go, Brian. Do you have a feel for it of whether we're going to, like, who's the first chip to fall? I mean, I would have said Durant and then maybe Kawhi, but it may not be that anymore. Like, it maybe Kyrie or maybe other people. In historically, when, let's say it was a LeBron free agency year, everyone else would wait until LeBron decided. And sometimes we had to wait a long time. Sometimes it was, I remember 2014 was July 9th. So free agency would stretch on through summer league. It would stretch on, you know, deep into the middle of July. And this last year, fortunately, LeBron gave us all a break, and I think it was July 1st, wasn't it? And then he hopped on a plane and went on his vacation. Historically, it's the top free agent on the board sort of sets the market, and all the teams with cap space have to wait on that guy. I don't know, because there's so many free agents this year, if it's going to go that way.
Well, Woj has reported essentially that Kawhi may take 4 or 5 meetings. New York, Toronto. I don't know if he's actually going to meet with Toronto. Philadelphia, Woj has brought up. Then Clippers, obviously, maybe the Lakers. And we have to. What are these meetings? Are these meetings 2 hours in a suite at a hotel? Because I've seen lots of free agents do that. Or are these meetings come to town, spend 3 hours at the facility, spend 3 hours at dinner, spend another hour in the hotel, whatever? Like, probably not. But like, what if? Mm-hmm. What if that's the case? You know, LeBron, his first free agency, which is now ancient history, he took meetings for 3 days. And then thought about it for like 5 days.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, even the way free agency moves now, especially since teams don't care about tampering and there's just light speed moves, even if you take 2 days, even if Kawhi waited until July 3rd, he could paralyze some teams. And that timing is so very important. And if I'm the, you know, that's one, another reason why the Lakers, it's not just how much space they have, and it's not even just, you know, the players they target, but they have to have a timing strategy too, and they're at a disadvantage because KP, even if the Lakers, like even if Kyrie called them and said, "Hey, I may be interested," they would be paralyzed until they got an answer.
Yeah, it's almost an advantage for the teams that aren't in the market for these top free agents, because you can go out and, you know, I think Patrick Beverley is going to be a really interesting one in terms of this timing you've mentioned, because they're, you know, a team like, if Phoenix creates a little more cap space and he's at the top of their list, you know, someone like that could go out and immediately go out and offer him 15 plus million a year. Well, the Clippers have to figure out what they're doing with Kawhi. They can re-sign him either way, so, you know, they don't necessarily have to wait around, but the Lakers may not know if they have, you know, cap space for Beverly, or, you know, whether they're going to be able to bring in a max free agent. So that's I think the kind of player you're really disadvantaged with.
And let's talk about the second tier. So if you're the Lakers are sort of, okay, you get one of the top two, let's call 2.5 if we're going to include the Jimmy Butler discussion on this, right? If you're waiting on one of those guys, you may miss out on the second tier, which are the guys that you actually really probably need to fill out this roster. So that's Darren Collison, that's Terrence Ross, that's Seth Curry. DeAndre Jordan might be a guy. Let's say re-signing, maybe there's an interest in re-signing JaVale McGee. I think he'd still be available. But these second-tier guys, they might come off the board fast because the teams that are
because they're not
in the
waiting around tier, because they're not
correct.
Waiting around.
Yeah. And the teams that are in, the max teams may all be vying for the same guys and waiting, but the sort of, unless there's a perfect fit, or unless there's, you know, a certain, like, unless there's a player who just really wants to wait, and thinks that it'll help their market to wait, I think they come off the board fast. I think the second tier might happen before the first tier.
Yeah, and the other thing is, those second tier guys, they're negotiating their contracts this week.
Yep.
Like, right now they're being negotiated. So, like, here's another guy. I've brought him up several times. That there's been nobody else who's talked about it. Bojan Bogdanović.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
KP, in your evaluation of the Pacers, do you think them trading for TJ Warren is basically an admission that Bogdanović is probably going to go elsewhere? Is that what you
think? No, because Warren, I think, is actually more of a power forward than a small forward at this stage of his career. So, you know, I think that it gives him the flexibility that he could slide to small forward if they lose Bogdanović. But I think it's much more an admission that Thaddeus Young is gone.
Huh. Mm. Okay. Well, anyway, that's an interesting guy who I feel like June 30th, you know, 7 o'clock Eastern, we could hear if somebody's got an agreement with him. Maybe it's the Pacers who have the agreement. But, right. Like, that's the type of guy who I think could help the Lakers, who, you know, could be gone fast and nobody even think twice about
it. Well, they had an interest in him a couple of years ago, but that was back when they were only doing one-year contracts. And, you know, he was a much better player than that and wasn't going to go for 1 year. But I think we're past the days where they do 1 year contracts. I think they can go out to 2 or 3 or 4 years. So
I mean, you can't.
I think they have to. Davis, they're going to have to.
Anthony Davis coming up, you're not going to have cap space again in all likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just in the sheer fact of creating trade assets, and that's the other thing is that when the Lakers do these deals, not only do they have to select players who they think can help them, they have to do contracts that are tradable because that's going to be their functional way to improve the roster is to potentially trade guys. So it's a, like, even if you were the best front office in the league and you had a lot of experience, this would be a tall order to execute this. And you know, whatever anybody wants to say about Rob Pelinka, no matter what, he doesn't have a lot of experience doing it. So, and they don't have a incredible depth of experienced guys in their front office. So,
well, one really important thing here though. I don't know that it even matters that Rob Pelinka is in charge right now. I think this is about LeBron and Anthony Davis recruiting players to come play with them. I mean, Brian, you were there when LeBron did that in Cleveland in 2014.
Yeah, he did. LeBron basically, I don't know, it's such a gray area. Like, David Griffin tells the story. He couldn't get Mike Miller interested. And then all of a sudden he got a call from Mike Miller's agent and said, yeah, Mike's in. You know, LeBron basically, you know, made it happen. He had called Kevin Love's agent, said, we have interest in trading for your guy. And he goes, don't. He wouldn't re-sign there. And then he tells the story about almost falling, you know, he's basically on his knees. I don't remember if he was on his knees or he was just like sitting at his desk, like just couldn't believe that LeBron had committed. I mean, they were feeling good about it, but they really, really didn't know until the essay came out. And he was still digesting the essay. And Jeff Schwartz, Kevin Love's agent, calls and says, hey, Kevin wants to come play for you now. And that was because LeBron had talked to Kevin and got the wheels in motion. And so did LeBron do the trade? Did LeBron execute the trade? No, he didn't negotiate, you know, hey, we're going to send Anthony Bennett in a first-round pick. It was pretty clear that he knew that Andrew Wiggins was going to get traded with the essay, but it was pretty, you know, did LeBron do that deal? No, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, even if LeBron says, okay, even if he calls, let's say, Jimmy Butler, and he talks Jimmy Butler into coming, then the Lakers have to negotiate the deal. And Rob Pelinka can't negotiate a deal that hamstrings them. Not necessarily with Jimmy Butler, but any player. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why people have joked. There's enough clutch free agents out there that the Lakers could load their entire team up with clutch sports guys.
Yeah, I think that's true. But Anthony Davis, we don't know how he is as a recruiter, but you know, I've certainly heard that he's been, you know, busy with the text messages and phone calls already. So ever since this was. What, last Saturday that this went through? So you have two recruiters now. It's not just LeBron. It's Anthony Davis, who, you know, hasn't really ever been in a market or a situation where his pull mattered. But we're about to find out. Like, you know, and I think it's an interesting referendum on who wants to come play with LeBron, but also who wants to come play with Anthony Davis and LeBron. In Cleveland, the fact that he was able to move those two guys that you talk about so quickly with just a phone call, speaks volumes of how he was regarded in the league at that time and the opportunity to play there alongside him was regarded at the time. That was, what, 5-6 years ago now? So let's see where we are. Things have changed, yeah. And situations have changed.
Before we go, KP, if the Lakers called you and said, "Hey, we need to hire you to be a consultant. How would you recommend? You know, how would you recommend them to spend their space? Let's just say it's the $23 million, not the full max."
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably have to look to try to get. I would probably look to try to get one, you know, about kind of $12 to $15 million player, and then someone in more like the $8 to $10 million range. So that 12 to 15 is probably either Patrick Beverley or Danny Green. I think those would be my top two targets if I were the Lakers. And then the second tier is, you know, if it's Danny Green, then maybe you're looking at George Hill or Ramona mentioned Darren Collison as your point guard options. Or if it's shooting guard, you know, Bullock becomes a much more of a favorable fit then, or, you know, there's a step downward, I guess. Maybe Trevor Ariza is someone else who they've been linked to in the past. You know, I think you're talking that kind of player.
And do you think the center market is deep enough that you don't go for a Brook Lopez? You just try to go for a Nerlens Noel, you go for a Robin Lopez or something like that?
Yeah, someone who can fit into that room exception.
JaVale McGee.
Spending your cap space on wings. Yeah. DeAndre Jordan, as you mentioned earlier. And then, you know, I think you can fit that guy into your room exception. And then that's not nearly as big a need, because I think if you look at the starting lineup for this team, the front court is going to be Kuzma, James, Davis. It's the guards you need to fill out, not the center.
I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope could come back.
Yeah. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is overly maligned. Like, statistically, he's right there with all these other guys who are going to be in the discussion with the Lakers. But because of the fact that he started last year slowly and is a clutch client, he's become kind of a punching bag.
Yeah, I think whatever it is, KP, there's certain players who can play next to LeBron and look really good, and you know, with the pressure and the spotlight, et cetera. And he had a bunch of moments last year where, like, in the fourth quarter, they'd kind of lean on him and didn't deliver. Doesn't mean he can't. Maybe he just wasn't comfortable in the offense Luke Walton was running or the way he was being used or whatever it was. But he certainly, for the spotlight that was on him, the year LeBron was here and the year LeBron wasn't here, he just didn't thrive in that spotlight, I think is the way to put it.
Yeah, he wouldn't be my first choice because he's not quite a good enough shooter. But, yeah. You know,
I don't think they're going to get many of their first choices. They got their first choice of a player. It was Anthony Davis. Okay, thank you, Ramona. Thank you, KP. Thank you, Andrew Hahn. Thank you, listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll be talking to you later in the week.